You are listening to the Pulse, Rod Murray's e-learning tech podcast, number 138.
Hello, this is Rod Murray. Welcome back to my podcast. That was a little teaser from a song called As the Wind Blows by Kitaro. If you listen to my podcast, you might gather that I'm a fan of New Age music. So I hope you enjoy that. I'll play the full song at the end of my podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Inside Higher Ed, the online source for news, opinion, and jobs for all of higher education. I also invite you to follow me on Twitter. My handle is RodsPods. As always, I post links to all of the things we talk about on my show notes at www.rodspulsepodcast.com. Today, my main topic is all about the 2015 Horizon Report. Now, if you don't know about that report, I highly recommend it. It's produced every year by the New Media Consortium. We were very fortunate to have one of the authors of the 2015 Horizon Report, Alex Freeman, give the keynote presentation at our annual PADLA conference. PADLA is the Pennsylvania, Delaware, and New Jersey Distance Learning Association. So Alex talked about the six key trends, six significant challenges, and six important tech developments that were highlighted in the Horizon Report. Just to give you a bit of a preview, they divide up the trends into short-term, mid-term, and long-term. And the same for technologies, near-term being 1 to 2 years, mid-term 2 to 3 years, and far-term 4 to 5 years. I don't want to steal all of his thunder, but I'll just mention that near-term, in terms of technology, is something you may already be doing, and that is bring your own device, have students bringing their own devices to class, flip classrooms in terms of trends, increased use of blended learning, and redesigning learning spaces. In fact, there's a very nice infographic that I linked to on my show notes. So I was able to record Alex. Unfortunately, the audio quality is not the best, but what I did is I took his PowerPoint and matched it up with his audio, and I have a link to a YouTube video. So if you wish to see his slides at the same time you're listening to him, please click on that link. And so, without further ado, here's the keynote talk by Alex Freeman of the New Media Consortium.
We focus on three different aspects of emerging technology within higher education. As a side, we do work with K-12 museums and libraries. So this is just one of the many reports that we work on. And we also work on global technology outputs. I just presented a higher education in Brazil a couple months ago. So about the project, we get 50 members of an advisory board, around 50 really smart people from industry, from corporate, from higher ed, researchers, not a consortium, to come together to help us understand the landscape of emerging technology over the next year to 5 years. And so we focus on three specific areas. We look at key trends that are accelerating technology adoption. We look at significant challenges that we need to overcome. And then we look at important technology developments. And so I'm going to go through those three. I'm going to give some examples from each of these categories and along these different adoption horizons that we've created. And then I'm going to give the opportunity to pass the mic around to ask me questions about, you know, some of the, how do you feel about where we place things? So ask questions about certain technologies or why certain technologies aren't on the report. We look at short-term, mid-term, and long-term trends. So they reach maximum impact in a short amount of time, are things that are happening right now that we're having a lot of discussions about, but 5 years from now, we're going to be like, well, that was something we talked about a while ago. Mid-term has kind of a longer trajectory before it reaches maximum impact, and as you can imagine, long-term is things that we're going to talk about for quite a long time. Within our reports, we focus also on three different implication areas, policy, leadership, and practice. So depending on where you are within your organization, you can kind of go to that section, find information that's very pertinent to the work that you're doing. So as you can see from there, I believe in the guide, in the program is an infographic that has all of that together into one, all 18 topics in a nice format. But I'm going to touch upon just one of each of these in each of the categories. So advancing cultures of change and innovation is what I chose to talk about today. In order to breed innovation and adapt to economic needs, higher education institutions must be structured in ways that allow for flexibility and spur creativity and entrepreneurial thinking. So this is about university offerings and operations. And so how is this playing out? How are universities advancing this? Well, sometimes it's university corporate partnerships. Sometimes it's universities acting as kind of incubators. This is an example that we had in the report called Innovation Academy. And it's at the University of Florida, my alma mater, where they have 30 different majors that have kind of a different type of a schedule where they work to try to create new products and work with companies to help develop some of those ideas. So, you know, that's how this university is working in that way. So maybe we'll see the next Mark Zuckerberg come out of UF. We'll see. Another thing we talk about is higher ed operations. So this is an article that we cited in the report about thinking about how higher ed can start thinking more like some of these startups that are coming out, or some of the tech companies. So lessons learned from Salesforce. You have five different categories here, and you know, the first one is really understanding your business model or models. And I think higher ed is looking at different models because of understanding that their audience is a mix of traditional students that are on campus. They take, you know, courses over credit hours and semesters, and then you have non-traditional students, which make up 43% of all higher education institutions. So thinking about how creating business models for those different students. Customer for life idea is that just because I graduate from college doesn't mean I don't need additional training throughout my career. So if a university can span your work, the span of your work life, then they're more engaged in the things that you do. Product development must be agile. So that idea of a professor creating a great curriculum and then just teaching it for 20 years is out of age. You've got to innovate, you've got to keep moving and keep advancing in that way. Customer service on focusing on outcomes. As Lewis mentioned, you know, his kids went to Westchester U and they got a job. So, you know, your primary interest within higher ed is getting a job. So how can a university connect you with employers? How can they connect you with corporates? How can they do that? How can they can make it easier for you to get a job? And then I won't focus too much on governance. We know we're here in higher ed that they don't move very quickly. So being able to make quick decisions is going to be important in the higher ed institution of the future. Next is growing focus on measuring learning. In the consumer world, this is really big. Data are routinely collected, measured, and analyzed to inform companies about nearly every aspect of customer behavior and preferences. Researchers and corporations are working to design similar analytics to reveal patterns in learning-related data. So this is about not only student data, but institutional data that's being collected at a rapid rate. So institutional information, engagement data, learning analytics kind of fall within this measurement area. So how is this playing out? This is in the report, so I was happy to see that Brightspace was one of the examples that we used within the higher ed report. This was at Victoria University in Australia. As Lewis mentioned, they're replacing a lot of LMSs because of the data analytics platform providing detailed reporting, assessment, and collaboration within that tool. So a lot of people are looking towards how to be able to measure more of their LMS, and so Brightspace is a leader in that area. Another thing that's coming out is, once you have all this data, how do you interpret it? So we have a lot of companies that are focusing on creating dashboards for both students and faculty to see student progress. So we have Gen Zavar, Signals, and Campus Quads, three examples of that happening. That's really, if I were to go back to graduate school, I would focus on data analytics, because everyone's collecting data, but it's still trying to figure out how to get that information out and make sense of it. I think it's really big right now. Next, we're looking at short-term impacts. These are things that we're talking about a lot today, but you know, we'll move on to other topics as we progress through time. Increasing use of blended learning, blended hybrid, you know, mostly drawing from the best practices of online and face-to-face methods that arise at universities. And the benefits are pretty clear. It's flexible, it's easy to access, and you can integrate sophisticated multimedia technologies. It's high on the list of appeals. So what this is about is unbundling the classroom, the fundamental parts of the curriculum, and creating new tools for social interaction. Going back to Florida, they did a study that examined face-to-face, blended, and fully online models, and found that the blended approaches were successful in unbundling this idea of where students felt that instructors were more accessible when the learning materials and discussion forums were placed online. So having be able to not only have access within the classroom, but also be able to go back to it when you need to. One of the criticisms about distance learning is the distance, is the lack of social interaction, of critical thinking, of those type of things that happen within the classroom space. So any kind of software tools that can come out, I use VoiceThread as an example, that can where a professor can speak and highlight areas and switch between slides, and you get that visual and that voice. I mean, this is just kind of the edge of where that's going. So, you know, if a corporation were to think about how to make it more lifelike within an online distance learning class, then, you know, they would see a lot of interest within the higher education community. Next, we move on to our second section, which is solvable versus difficult and linkage challenges. So to get a sense of this matrix here, the y-axis is it solvable, yes or no? The x-axis is do we understand it, yes or no? So if we understand the problem and we know how to solve it, it's solvable. If we don't understand the problem and don't know how to solve it, that's what we call a wicked problem. You know, we don't know how to define it, let alone solve it. And if it's somewhere in the middle where we do understand it, but we don't quite have the solution yet, then it falls in the difficult category. So in the solvable category, we have improving digital literacy. The traditional view of literacy as ability to read and write has expanded to encompass understanding digital tools and information. The lack of consensus on what comprises digital literacy is impeding many in higher education from formulating policies and programs. Compounding this issue is the notion that digital literacy encompasses skills that differ for students and faculty. So the challenge here is really defining the digital literacy and what does it mean for these two different players within higher ed, the faculty and the student. So there are different ways that universities and companies are working to help kind of provide additional digital literacy for both faculty and students. This is a Tools of Engagement project at the SUNY, and what it does is an online platform for faculty to collaborate and to share ideas on how to use new pedagogy. So, and also to develop a collaborative space to work together to investigate topics like mobile apps and media production. So this is, a lot of this is happening, work is happening online. Similarly, at Cornell University, they have a digital literacy resource for students that focuses on kind of the research side of it. So conducting research and understanding new types of intellectual property rights and initially creating media-centric presentations. Personalized learning. So this refers to a range of educational programs, learning experiences, instructional approaches, and academic support strategies intended to address the specific needs, interests, aspirations, or cultural backgrounds of individual students. Advances such as online learning environments and adaptive learning technologies make it possible to support a student's learning path. So everyone is in agreement that we should personalize and customize things, but how do we do it? That's why this is in a difficult stage, is that we're still in the process of there's still debate about what defines personalized learning. And there's an unwillingness of some faculty to even listen to what that means. And of course, there's privacy issues and student data issues. I know that in the vendor area, Barracuda is working on being a solution to that problem, because it's becoming, especially in Europe and other countries, that concern is much higher than in the United States, and it's still present here. There's also just lack of general research on the effectiveness of personalized learning and education. A lot of the work that's been done has been in the K-12 space, and the results are mixed. But that doesn't stop organizations from trying to address this challenge. So this is an example. This is Ex Libris, and this is a I think of it as kind of the Amazon or Netflix of research. You know, holiday season, so I was doing a lot of shopping on Amazon, and I was buying. For some reason, adult coloring books are coming back as a big trend, and so I was like, okay, I'm gonna find my friend an adult coloring books. So it's like mandalas and nature, and so on the bottom I had all these suggested things that people bought. And I was like, oh, these are much cooler than the ones that I was looking at. And it was also like, colored pencils and things I hadn't thought about. I'm like, okay, great. I'm in conversation with how people are accessing this tool. And Exolibris is a company that's working in the research space. So if I'm researching a particular topic, it gives me a list of what other people have researched in that area. And it kind of puts me in conversation. And spur some spontaneous ideas on, it's that idea of like walking through the stacks in a library like, okay, you're looking for this book, you're like, whoa, this is an interesting book here. So it's kind of moving in that direction that gives us that sense of discovery that is sometimes missing if we're trying to find the exact thing that we're trying to look for. Next is wicked challenges. And so the wicked challenge we have here are just kind of what the things, different models that are disrupting higher education. New models of education are bringing unprecedented competition to the traditional models of higher ed, where students typically receive instruction by faculty or teaching assistant per credit hour over 4 years on campus. So that is the structure that has been in place for such a long time, and so we're seeing some competition to how that is happening. MOOCs really helped kind of shape that area. And it started, within MOOCs, the rise and fall of MOOCs, we have learned a lot from that. And a lot of what we've learned is about those non-traditional students, about those people that are taking MOOCs who pretty likely already have degrees. And so why are people going into MOOCs? And so, I think that's helping to inform these competitors that are starting to emerge and competing ideas. Such as Minerva University, and there's not even a classroom for Minerva. In their initial pilot, they had a cohort of 30 students, and they basically travel around to different cities over the course of different semesters, and they do project-based activities within the city, and they engage in interactive virtual symposia and seminars. So they use online learning, and they use the city as their classroom. At Brandon University, they're focusing on competency-based education. So this idea of being able to acknowledge the skills that you've already received in other programs or through life and apply it to your degree program. And you can do it through apps. So this is a CBS this morning. I'm not going to show the video for the sake of time, but talks about a student who takes courses on their free time through a mobile app and is able speed up the amount of time it takes to complete a degree for a fraction of the cost that it takes to complete a degree. And I've been talking, we all know that higher education over the past 10 years has doubled or tripled in some cases. So that's putting a big pinch on students to come up with, like, do I need a college degree, or do I need, this recognition? Do I need a traditional college degree, or do I need this recognition so I can get to the job? So how can I get to the job faster? So these are two of the ways that are disrupting. So we're not sure where it's going to land. I think this idea of the business models we talked about, maybe there's a business model for your traditional student, maybe there's a business model for your non-traditional student. How is that going to play out? How is that going to affect learning institutions are created or they shift? Finally, I want to talk about the technologies that are highlighted in the report. We have the 1 year or less, things that are happening right now. There's some activity happening. And then there's a far term that there's a little bit of activity and there's still some still some questioning about their impact on teaching and learning. So the first is bring your own device. We're all pretty much familiar with that. That was a term coined by Intel in 2009 for their staff that were encouraged to bring their own device into the classroom. And so that's kind of trickled into higher ed over the years. And that's really impacting universities in a couple ways. One, it's increasing the mobile learning capabilities, that you can learn at any time, anywhere. Learning is an activity in such a place, so you can carry that with you. And the other thing is that it's impacting infrastructure within a university, because if you have to support, what we have, college students spend about 3.5 hours per day using mobile phones, and on average, they own about 2.7 devices. So if they're bringing 2.7 devices times however many students are in your space, that's taking up a lot of bandwidth. And that being able to supply infrastructure and power plugs too. You take When I was in Brazil, I took power for granted. I was just plugged in like at the airport, and I couldn't find any power plugs anywhere. I was like, oh, I can't get any work done. So my mobility was severely limited through that. So here's a few figures to look at about where we are with BYOD. So Bradford Networks did a survey of higher education and found that 89% of respondents stated that they allow students to use their own devices on campus networks, while only 44% of K-12 respondents allow students to bring their own device. So we see within higher ed a much higher comfort level. And I don't think it was too long ago, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, where New York City public schools weren't allowing students to bring in their mobile phones. So I think it's the idea of switching from the idea that it's a phone to it's a mobile computer. And I think that's what the shift is going to need within K-12 space. But we're seeing a lot of that happen within higher ed moving quickly. 72% stated that students use the devices to complete class assignments. So that were, you know, they, whether it was incorporated into the lesson plan or not, they were using it. So we see a lot of people using it. If I go into a museum, I'm a museum guy. If I go to a museum and I don't see what I want on the label, I'll pull up my phone and go to Wikipedia or go to something to find additional information. That's all that's happening in classrooms. 52% responded that personal devices were being integrated directly into the classroom experience. So these are actual lesson plans that incorporate mobile devices. So we're seeing a lot of movement in that area. And down the road here in Pittsburgh, I think they just completed a phase of their renovation of the David Lawrence Hall, where they've shifted the spaces around to focus on how people are using mobiles within that space. And I'm really curious to sit in on the panel discussion this afternoon, because I'd love to see how that's impacting, how the digital world is impacting the physical space. I think, you know, from our research, the infrastructure being able to support all those devices is a key part of that. Midterm, this is one of my favorite topics, is makerspace. Since I'm a museum guy, I love things that involve objects and making. And so in the midterm horizon, we see a lot of movement into makerspaces on campuses. And so that's kind of part of the redesigning learning spaces as well. It's like, if you have a computer lab, but everyone has their own computer, what do you do with that space? If you have a library and you have books and people aren't looking at the books and you store them somewhere else, what do you do with that space? So a lot of universities are focusing on makerspaces as a solution to what do you do with those spaces. And also, it signals a shift in how we think about the type of skill sets that people need to have, and providing additional outlets for creativity, and using some of the newer software like 3D printers, laser cutters, 3D modeling software. The garage at USC is a makerspace where students are able to tinker around and work in that type of manner. And at Grand Valley State University, they have a technology showcase that they keep open for both faculty and students so they can work with different tools within this making environment. Lastly, I've got the FAR term. This is an adaptive learning technologies is an area where the NMC has recently placed a lot of focus, and I'll explain that in just a moment. Going back to adaptive learning is a sophisticated, data-driven, and in some cases, non-linear approach to instruction and remediation, adjusting to a learner's interactions and demonstrated performance level, and subsequently anticipating the types of content and resources learners need at a specific point in time, and that specific point in time is becoming real-time feedback. And so we're thinking about, you know, this idea of this measuring learning analytics, how do we apply that into software? You know, at the Ohio State University, one of our NMC members, they have a MOOC, a calculus MOOC, where they created MOOCulus, which is something that you can add to the online class, and it gives feedback about questions. And so the question that they had was, how many questions should a quiz have? Well, it depends on, do you need more questions to get to your to understand the concept, or do you need fewer? And so this platform allows you to understand. It gives you as many questions as you need to master that idea. And I wish I would have had that, because I did horrible in calculus, and it was because it is one size fits all idea. So MOOCulus is one of the movements in that direction. Another large effort is the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. They're working on several projects in this area. One is the Integrated Planning and Assessment System, IPAS, and the other is the Next Generation Courseware. So in September, they announced the 7 finalists for their Next Generation Courseware about $20 million they're devoting to that, to bring these companies together. Some of our consortia, like the Open Learning Initiative at Stanford and Rice, is involved too. But these seven corporations and researchers are working together with higher institutions to help, you know, move the needle on graduation rates. On, you know, their main focus is to for underserved students to progress through college. We are working with them directly. We just announced in late October, early November, that we received a large grant from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to help them with that effort. So we're going to be working to help create a community around all the different grantees that are involved within the different higher ed initiatives at the foundation, and be able to disseminate some of the research. So this idea of personalized learning being a challenge, not having a lot of research or examples, like, well, there's a lot of activity happening right now. And so we'll keep watching this space with the NMC, because we're going to be helping to disseminate that information through conferences. We're going to be at Southwest EU and a number of conferences throughout the year. But that's adaptive learning is definitely, I see that as one of the topics today, and I'd love to learn more about that, because that's a growing topic and interest in higher education.
So I hope you enjoyed that. I think you'll find that the Horizon Report is a very valuable document. It's very interesting just to learn about how they put that together. And you can find out more by linking to the full document on my show notes. And so stay tuned also for the full song As the Wind Blows by Kitaro. So until next time, have a great week.
that's it for today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to give Rod feedback. You can leave comments on his blog or send email to rod@rodspulsepodcast.com. The preceding audio commentary is the product of the author, Dr. Rodney Murray, and does not represent the official viewpoint of the University of the Sciences or any other institution or company.